Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Mimi Merwich, Mike O'Connor, and Steve Withiard making his debut. This episode, we will be discussing the goalless draw for Fulham on the road against Millwall. A point is a point. I'm happy with a point, but obviously would have preferred three, and we will be talking about that. We'll be going through our thoughts on this match in a little bit of detail. Mimi was at the match, so she will be basically be in our eyes. The team did make a replay available about an hour ago, so I got a chance to watch a decent amount of it. I'm sure my co-host did get a chance to watch it as well. So, again, we will be discussing that, going through it. But Mimi will be our lead on this. It looks like she's on the line. I'm going to bring her on.
Hi, Russ. How are you?
Mimi, it's been a long time. Welcome back to Cottage Talk.
Thanks. I'm glad to be back on the show.
Listen, it's been a long time. It's been a long time, and I've wanted to get you back on. And, you know, I'm glad that you actually could come on for this show. You were there. I actually just watched the replay, you know, about an hour ago. But, again, it didn't give me enough chance to really get into the entire thing. I watched a good amount of it. But I'm going to, you know, again, just so you know, Mimi, I've already talked to you about this. We will be leaning on you a little bit for your thoughts on this. You know, we will go to you for ratings of the players, the manager, and also Millwall and the refs. So we'll be leaning on you a little bit. I hope you're okay with that.
Sure, I hope so. I hope my memory lasts out, and I'm looking forward to getting started.
Okay, fantastic. It looks like Mike is on the line, so I'm going to bring him on. Mr. O'Connor, you're with us.
Yes, I am. How's it going, Russ? How you doing, Mimi?
Hi, I'm good, thanks.
Mike, listen, thank you so much for joining us. I was able to get you that that replay. You know, again, did you get a chance to watch any of it?
I did, actually, yeah. I tried to watch as much as I could. I went to basically the highlights of the 2 minute and then based off of written reports and kind of took chunks, 10 minutes plus or minus the highlight to see the build-up and the aftermath of it. So I did as much as I could.
Yeah, I did the same, and I sent it to Steve as well. Hopefully Steve will be joining us. Steve, you know, again, if you're listening, don't worry about it. We know it takes a little bit first time through to get through blogtalkradio.com, so take your time and join us when you can get in, and we'll definitely bring you on. But guys, let's get going, and Mimi, I'm going to start with you. I just want to, you know, I want to get your just thoughts, your opening thoughts of what you watched. You were there yesterday, so just share with me just an overview of the match itself.
Well, it wasn't quite what I expected. It was my first time visiting the Den, and you hear a lot about what it's going to be like and what the fans are going to be like. But in fact, it was a very subdued atmosphere, and the Fulham fans were quite lively, and that was fantastic. But really, I didn't think the result was very positive at all. Millwall were in dreadful form. They weren't terrible, but they really did lack that cutting edge, and I think we really should have got 3 points from them. We in the first half, we were so bad. We just were so static going forward. No one was running into space. They looked like, in fact, at points a better team, but in the second half, things looked up. So there are some positives to be taken from it, but it wasn't a fantastic match.
No, definitely not, Mimi. And listen, I had a chance to skim through this. You know, again, I got to watch a decent amount of it. It looks like Mike did it as well. And what stood out to me is kind of what you nailed upon was that that the match, the 3 points were there. The 3 points were there. They were not looking, you know, like they wanted the match. You know, again, they didn't have the cutting edge, neither did we. But, again, we looked like the better side. So, again, that's the disappointing part of this is that the match was there. They did not look that great, and we should have taken advantage of them more. And I look forward to going through some of these key moments with you and really getting your thoughts on it. Mike, I'm going to go to you now. Again, like me, you got to watch some of the replay. What are your thoughts about what you watched?
It was a very, very slow, not very creative kind of match. And both teams, honestly, if you look on the form table and you look at where we stand on the table, that's exactly the kind of match that it panned out to be. It wasn't very, it wasn't full of skill or artisanry. It was kind of slow and it was scrappy. At the same time, I think that from what I've seen on the highlights and what I've seen on the replay, we were actually the better team overall when it came to the chances that fell to us. And it's just an example of how far we've fallen with the fact that we can't seem to put away any of these chances. And we're letting teams such as Millwall, who, to be completely honest, are out of form and quite dreadful, to draw 0-0 at home. I mean, we should be winning these matches, and it's kind of it's a foreshadowing of hopefully what is not to come for the rest of the season, because it may be a long end to the season for us.
If they play like this, Mike, you know, again, against an opponent that I feel was inferior to them, but again, the table doesn't lie. They are where they are, and Fulham are where they are. And the frustrating part of watching this is it's basically, you know, again, what going back to what Mimi said, this is a team that, again, I never felt at any time that they were going to score a goal. They did have a few scoring opportunities, but theirs were even more far and few between than Fulham's. Fulham actually had more scoring opportunities, but they just could not finish them, and that's the disappointing part. We will talk about the goal that was disallowed, and I have my thoughts on that when we get there. But, Mimi, I'm going to go right back to you. Let's start here. I want to get your thoughts on the starting 11 and also the formation that Kit decided to go with.
Yeah, I wasn't overwhelmed when I heard the start 11. It's a shame that we're not starting with Brian Ruiz, just because during our last match he made such a difference when he came on, and I thought perhaps if we started with him from the beginning of the match, we would look slightly better. I also wonder, and I love Hugo Rodriguez. I think he tries really hard and he seems like a lovely person, but I'm wondering why we're still persisting with him, because he's had such a dreadful few games. And sometimes he really doesn't add much. And I feel like perhaps if we started someone like Corey Woodrow or even Moussa Dembele, perhaps that might be better. I'd also quite like to see Dan Byrne return, which might be an unpopular opinion. It was something my dad and I were talking about actually after the match. He's such a strong leader. I was watching him during the warm-up and he was just chivvying everyone along, and he's a really, really good force in the team. As well, he's very good in set pieces, and we haven't been turning up for set pieces, so I wonder, maybe it's time for Dan Byrne to return.
Interesting take there. And how do you think, you know, again, I just want to get your thoughts on the formation. We've been talking so much about the formation. Do you think it worked in this match?
Not really. There was a lot of, the trouble was McCormack was having to drop back a lot. He wasn't getting any service, so we were really lacking a lot of power up front. We weren't really getting the ball forward efficiently. I like seeing Alex Kakanitlich on the wing, because I think that's his strongest position. But I wonder if he's sort of wasted unless we do have someone in the middle to distribute and someone to be creative. There was that creative link that was missing. And it was much better in the second half when I think we went to a diamond.
Okay. Interesting take there. Mimi, sorry, I'm trying to help out Steve as he's having some issues coming in on the show. Mike, I want to get your thoughts on what Mimi just shared and your thoughts also on the starting 11.
The starting 11 are exactly what I thought what Kit was going to put out, because he doesn't seem to change his mind too often. He seems to have just kind of stuck with these guys that he feels are the best in his mind to win a match, which hasn't been happening for 5 games now, so I don't know how that's still kind of the team sheet that's being put out, but it is. His formations, I just really don't think he gets it. So what I'm trying to say is that he's obviously a new manager, and I think we need to give him until the end of the season. We need to give him more than 3/4 of one season to build his own style of management and how he wants his players to play. But it doesn't seem like he's learning from his mistakes. Every single game we're seeing the exact same mistakes. I think we're playing too much diamond-shaped formations. The ball is only going through the center, which I understand with Scott Parker and the players we have, but we really need to start playing to the wings. And I don't know if Kit just refused to do that or if he just doesn't see it working. But overall, the starting 11 didn't surprise me, and I think Ruiz should have started from the off, although Kakanicic does deserve his spot because I think he was one of the bright spots of a very dull game. But I think Ruiz should have probably started. And I think Kit needs to seriously start thinking about this formation change, or he may be the one that changes, unfortunately. Who knows?
interesting takes by both of you on this. Again, it's a little frustrating. You know, again, I'm watching this, and the opportunity was there for all 3 points. Let's just say that. And I think that's what really gets me. You know, the starting 11, I kind of expected. Well, actually, I actually thought he was going to start with Brian Ruiz, going back to what Mimi said. But, you know, again, he went with Kaká, and we're going to talk about that because I definitely want to get your thoughts, Mimi, on Kaká's play and as we go through this. But, you know, again, big thing with me is learning how to adjust on the fly if things aren't working. Are you going to make changes? And we'll definitely, you know, again, we will talk about that as we go through this. And, guys, unfortunately, Giannis wanted to join us and could not join us. Something happened at the last minute, so Giannis couldn't join us. But guess what? He has some thoughts he wants to share on the match, so I'm going to share them. And then I want to get your thoughts on that, and then we'll move on to the key moments. But again, I told Giannis I would share his thoughts on this, so here we go with Giannis. Giannis emailed me this. Pauses. We got an away point. We kept the clean sheet, albeit against a god-awful side. Negatives. Lineup. No Ruiz or Grimmer. When the hell will Kit learn? Why is our most skillful player on the bench? Formation. Note to Kit. The diamond formation does not bloody work. It is too narrow. Lack of creativity in the middle. Doesn't utilize players like Kaká to their full potential. Plus, teams have worked us out. We are humdrum, boring, and predictable. Two shots on target in 90 minutes. Lamentable. Rodiega. Why on earth is he starting? Looks woefully out of sorts and short of confidence. Why not start Woodrow? Why are players like Woodrow and Roberts sitting and rotting on the bench? Substitutions, again, waited an hour to bring on Ruiz instead of going for the win. Brings Fofana on for the last 8 minutes. Negative beyond belief. Kit's deportment is all wrong. Looks totally lost, with 90 minutes just standing there with his hands in his pockets. He looks like someone just stole his teddy bear. Things look so bleak, I would even consider David Holley getting the job. Yes, Giannis actually said this.
Wow.
I like Kit. He was a great servant as a player and had a good start this year, but he has been found out. He is too stubborn, won't change the formation when clearly it is doomed as receiving a Grammy with Kanye West in the audience. I believe he needs to go now, but if not, give him help. Danny Murphy, anyone? I took some stick from Twitterers today, labeled as deluded and utterly irrational, but the facts don't lie. No win in 7 games, 19th place, next 4 games, Wolves, Derby, Watford, and Bournemouth. Waiting to make a change at the season won't mean a damn thing if we're in League One. Those are the thoughts of Giannis Giannis. I just had to share that. And Mimi, I just want to get your thoughts of what Giannis just shared.
I'm so sad that Giannis couldn't join us, but I'm glad you were able to share his thoughts. There's a lot I agree with there. I absolutely agree about Patrick Roberts. I felt like if ever there was a game where Patrick Roberts could come on and shine, this was it. The Millwall defence was not that good, and it really needed someone to just run at them repeatedly, and that's something that Roberts can do. And I can see him really shining, and he looks like he's been improving. Perhaps it is time for him to be given a longer stint on the pitch. I totally agree with him about subs. Kit waits way too long to make substitutions, and often they're the wrong ones. It's one of his weaknesses. But what I would disagree with is getting rid of Kit. I feel like one of Fulham's main problems is a lack of stability over the years. We've had so many managers. There's no sort of consistent building within the team and within the squad. And the thing about Kit is that he knows our young players. He knows the team, and the team seem to be supporting him. So perhaps bringing in someone to help him. I mean, Murphy is a very interesting suggestion. Might be a better idea. But I do agree that he's stubborn, and that he didn't make some good decisions.
Yeah, you know, and again, watching this, I kept thinking about what he wrote to me. And listen, I don't want Kit to go at this point either, Mimi. I'm in agreement with you. I disagree with Giannis on that. I see why Giannis is feeling that way. But I actually truly believe that it seems like to me, he's very stubborn. If he's willing to get another set of eyes in there to bounce ideas off of, I think he could learn from it and help him. You know, again, he's taking this all upon himself. I know he has people there that are helping him, but these are people that he's already worked with. Bring someone in from the outside the box thinking. Giannis brings up Danny Murphy. I'm not against that, but again, someone else to help him, but he's got to be willing to take on the help. It's got to come from him. And if he's going to keep on being stubborn like this, I think we're just going to, you know, we're going to finish off the season struggling. And I want us to start building, and this is not the way to do it. This is an opportunity. This is 2 points dropped. There's no question in my mind. And I disagree with Giannis on this point of getting rid of Kidd at this point. I want to give him the rest of the season. But he has to be willing to change. And that seems to be the crux of some of our problems. It's being stubborn. I do agree with you guys on this. I think he's way too stubborn and does wait too long to make substitutions. You know, again, why didn't he bring on Ruiz at the half? You know, again, we've talked about this. You're at nil-nil. Why not do it at the half? Make a change then. But he made the change when he did. Mike, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on what Giannis shared.
I think what Giannis shared is very much kind of the epitome. It is the example of how probably the majority of Fulham fans are feeling at the moment. I think he worded it, I mean, straight, like, blunt and honest. I think that's what everyone needs to hear, especially if Kit. I think he needs to hear that as well if he hasn't heard it already, because he does seem to be too stubborn. He refuses to not maybe admit when he's wrong, but he kind of refuses, the way I see it, is if you're refusing to change your formation or you're refusing to change the players that you're starting with, that to me is a physical example of you refusing to admit that you're wrong, i.e. starting Richards over Grimmer, i.e. starting Kakaniklic over Ruiz when you know Ruiz is no longer leaving. So he's very, very stubborn, and I think that he really needs to shape up with his decision-making when it comes to formations, when it comes to the players he's playing, and I think he really needs to be more in touch with the fans. He can be amazing pals and a great leader for the boys on the pitch, but he needs to stay in touch with the fans, because many times, in my opinion, the fans know just as much, if not more so, than the manager when it comes to their own team, because we're much more neutral in perspective when it comes to game time, when it comes to preparation for games. Do I think Kit should go? I do not. As I said earlier, I think we need to give the man more than 3/4 of his first season of being a senior manager ever to figure out his management style. At the same time, giving him that time, is it going to risk us being relegated again into League One? That's kind of the issue you have here. Do we keep him and put our faith in him? Next season he comes out of the blocks and we start dominating this league as we very well should, or do we keep with him and suddenly we're in the relegation places with 5 games to go left in the season? So it's really kind of a tight situation. But overall, I think we stick with Kit. He may be stubborn, but he needs to learn the error of his ways. And yeah, we all know we're not making the playoffs this year, so why not? Would we just want to change manager this close to the end of the season? I wouldn't do it. I think it's too risky, and we should stick with Kit and honor the contract, at least for now.
See, I agree with that. You know, I agree with sticking with Kit and letting him play out the string and see where we are this summer. Then they have a huge decision to make, because they need to make that jump. We're certainly not going to be promoted this season. So it's about, I hate to say this because it's driving me crazy, Mimi, to say this, it's about survival again. I thought I wouldn't be saying this, but again, that's the first thing right now. It's about survival. I wanted to get beyond talking about survival and talk about building for the future, but we can't do that yet because the table doesn't lie. This is where we are. And this tells you how desperate the situation is. When Giannis Giannis says on this show he would be willing to have David Hulley in charge, you know things are not going well. So again, the fact that Giannis said that, just let me know that things are tough right now. And David, nothing against you because you had some great ideas, but that just shows you how Giannis feels about the situation. He's feeling kind of desperate that he would throw that out there. I just found that funny. He wanted me to share that. All right, guys. Steve is certainly having some troubles first time coming in, so hopefully Steve will be joining us at some point. I've just told him not to worry about it. Just take your time, and hopefully he'll be joining us. But in the meantime, let's start going through this match. And Mimi, I'm going to start with you. Again, 12th minute, they actually had a decent opportunity from Lee Gregory that was set up by Jimmy Abdel. But again, nothing really came of it, and Fulham dodged a slight bullet there. But about 5 minutes later, Fulham actually had a decent opportunity to score here with a really nice run by LVC set up by Ross McCormack. Nice pass to him that set him up on his way. and set up Kaká for a really good opportunity, but he could not convert. Talk about this, Mimi, and what was going through your mind when you saw this live?
Yeah, I remember this moment, and I think Kaká started running through straight through the middle of the pitch and sort of went on in on goal on his own, if I'm thinking about the correct moment. And he didn't really receive that much support. It was great to see Kaká have that moment, but I feel like we were very unwilling to commit men forward during the first half, at least. And it seemed as though, really, those kind of moments were so far and few in between, and it was such an important moment. But it was like we weren't getting forward, we weren't testing their defence. The few players who seemed to be doing that were really Kaká, Nitlich, a little bit of McCormack, and also Lasavink and Christensen.
Right. Right, and that's, you know, again, it's funny, going through it even a short period of time that I got to watch this, that's exactly, those are the three players that stood out to me. Those are the only players that seemed like they were really giving the defense of Millwall any hard time. And the one thing about this opportunity, Mimi, the reason why I want to talk about this, because this goes to our issue, and you just nailed it. There aren't enough players going forward, you know, to help out LVC. You know, again, Kaká was there, and that's great. But again, he had boatloads of room to run, which just talks about his ability. And that's why it's unfortunate that they could not make more of this opportunity and score, actually, because, again, this was a perfect opportunity to score. And nothing against Kaká, but, again, you know, this is a lost opportunity for me. And I'm going to go over to you, Mike, because again, we're just going to focus on some of these opportunities. And I'm going to go back to you talking about Kaká and also about Hugo. They both hit the side netting in between 4 minutes, the 38th and the 42nd minute. Both of them had opportunities to score. And again, hitting the side netting, this just isn't good enough, Mike.
No, it's absolutely not. I think Kaká Nitlich really should have buried his shot. There is no – and that definitely needed to happen. And you know what? Both of them did. Both of them need to bury their shots. There's no question about it. And this is really why we're 19th. If we have players that are able to take their chances and just put them on target – and put them in the net, then we're talking about a completely different position on the table and probably a much more lively atmosphere on Cottage Talk than what we're currently having. It's kind of a sad state of affairs, but both of these players really hitting the side netting, okay, yeah, you had a great chance, but how many shows of Cottage Talk are we going to have to say Hugo's hit the side netting, Kaká Nitlich hit the side netting, could have been a chance? I mean, it's just Groundhog's Day over and over again. When will these guys start putting it at least on target, like for the goalkeeper to make a save or to put it in the net? So you're absolutely right. It's completely ridiculous at this point that professionals that are being paid this amount of money are hitting the side of the net, especially with the chances that they had. I mean, they weren't just half chances. They were full-on chances that needed to have been finished. Yeah.
You know, and that's the problem here. You know, Mimi nailed it again when we're going through this, because I'm only going to give you a certain amount of opportunities here because that's all Fulham really had. And they need to be doing better in these opportunities. And Mimi, this next one that I'm going to bring to you, you know, again, you might have to think about it for a second, you know, to remember when this was, but this is in the second half. This is really talking about what you've been talking about since you came on the show. It's in the 58th minute. We're now close to the 60th minute, the 58th minute, and Fulham actually have a counterattack. You know, one of their, I guess you could say, only times of really having a decent counterattack. This is a decent counterattack, but it really turned out to nothing, and this was actually led by Kaká and Ross McCormack. It ended up with Ryan Tunnicliffe and really ended up into nothing. But the only reason why I'm bringing this up is because, again, this is just an opportunity that went nowhere, and this is really a microcosm of what's going on with Fulham right now, Mimi.
Yeah, definitely. And I remember this because Fulham so rarely counterattack. I've no idea why we seem to have. I mean, it made sense to me a few seasons ago when our side was quite old or the average age was high, so it made sense if we didn't have the fastest squad because we made up for that in other areas. But at the moment, we have all of these young players who can easily run at defence. And it just seemed like they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know who to pass to. They sort of looked around and sort of it got lost. And it was such a shame because it could have been a great opportunity.
Right. And that's why, you know, that's why I want to talk about that, because, again, we're talking about what's going on with the squad. It's so, you know, again, it's – I wouldn't – shambles isn't the word, but again, it's just – the continuity is not there. You know, again, I could talk about other sports, about players knowing their jobs, being able to be in sync. This team's not in sync. They don't trust each other. You know, again, the movement is – you know, again, the movement wasn't bad, but it turned out to nothing because, again, it just doesn't seem like a fluid team. It doesn't seem like a team that each person knows what the other person's going to be doing. It just seems like players are just out there, and they're not, you know, they're not connecting with each other, and that's the poor part of all of this, because they have talent, and it's up to the manager to harness that talent and bring it together into a unit. And right now, Mimi, they're not playing together as a unit. That's what I'm noticing. You know, again, these are players that I do believe have talent. They're just not putting it all together. Does that make sense?
Definitely, and I completely agree with you there. It's almost as though they don't entirely trust each other. I mean, there was a moment later on when Kaká was in on goal, and Roddy Aker was in a really good position to the side of him. He looked up and he thought, no, I'm not going to pass. And he passed. He did an awkward shot to McCormack on the corner of the box. And to me, that said, you don't trust Roddy Aker to go in and bury the shot. And it's worrying, really, in a way. Perhaps what's needed is just intensive work in training together, and I hope that's something they're doing.
Yeah, you know, again, that could be true. You know, again, they need to be playing more and more together and training more and more, and hopefully that will come together. But it just seems like a starting 11 that is just not... Like you said, Mimi, I think you nailed it. They don't just they don't trust each other, and maybe it's just not from playing together enough, and they just need to keep playing with together. Eventually, it will click. But it almost seems like it's just like it's like an engine not firing on all cylinders. It's just not all coming together yet. It has potential. That's why we see these opportunities, but they're not able to finish these opportunities. This is a poor side they played, okay? But guess what? Fulham are a poor side right now too. Because you should be able to beat teams like this, even on the road. That's why I'm frustrated. I'm angry because there's no reason why they should have that this match should have ended up in a 0-0 draw. They were the better side, but they could not score a flipping goal, and that's what's frustrating. I'm sorry, guys. I'm going on a little bit of a rant here,
oh,
but
no,
I'm
it's
just
totally worth it.
I'm ticked off by this because Mike. I was waiting for the replay, and I see the replay, and it basically backed up everything that I listened to. And it's just – it's an opportunity just gone by once again. And it's just frustrating. And I'm sorry, the buck does stop with the manager. He needs to get this unit to play together as a cohesive unit. This is not a cohesive unit. That's all I can say about that. All right, Mike, I'm going to go back to you. Let's now go to – I guess what you could say probably, you guys would probably agree, the key moment of the match. And this was the opportunity by Hugo. And, again, I've watched this back and forth several times. And the goal was disallowed because Hugo was called for offside. What are your thoughts about this? Did you get a good look at this?
Yeah, I did, actually. And I actually timed the highlight and the during on the replay. And right when the ball was kicked, touched by Stafelidis, I paused it and I looked. And I really hate to say it, but Hugo was offside by the slightest. I mean, this involved me hitting the pause button in a static environment to see, yeah, okay, he was probably offside by half a foot. But for a linesman in real time to have made that call, you know, it could have gone either way. But I think what's really telling, not so much that it was an offside goal disallowed, it's the fact that Hugo didn't use his head. Like, how did he not head the ball first time? He seems to be the only striker in the championship that refuses to use his head or can't even score with it. Granted, he did score the rebound, which is great, which was ruled offside. But I don't know. It's just going back to the conversation of does Kaká Nikolić not trust Hugo? Well, can you really fault him sometimes when Hugo's not putting these simple chances away and is really making it a more difficult time for himself than needs to be? So it does kind of seem like a team that doesn't trust each other and a team that certain players have more of a connection with others and they are more likely to relinquish possession of the ball to them, even if another player is in a better position, like you just talked about. So for Hugo, though, was it offside? I don't think it was the right call. in real time with the fluidity of the match. But if you actually pause it right when the ball is kicked, he is offside by half a foot. So I really can't really say too much against the referee's decision there, unfortunately.
Okay. And I watched it back several times, and at certain angles I thought that possibly
it
was the right call. Then I look at it again. I'm like, no, it was the wrong call. You know,
right.
Again, I go back and forth. But I watched it about a half a dozen times, and some of the times I actually thought that the linesman probably got it right, and then the other times, like, no, it's so close. You know, it could have gone either way,
right.
So I could see where you're going on that.
Yeah.
Mimi, you were there. What are your thoughts? Did you get a good view of this?
It was right in front of me, but I'm sorry to say we were sitting sort of end on, which can make it sometimes quite difficult to see when the ball's kicked, and it was such a quick moment. We all thought that the goal had gone in, so everyone stood up and started celebrating, and I agree. I think it was offside, but I haven't been able to see the replay yet, so I can't say certainly. I mean, it was fantastic to see. I thought it was actually quite a good move from Rod Jaeger, because he got the ball in an awkward position and still managed to finish, which was slightly frustrating that it was from an offside position, but I mean, hopefully it'll somehow give him some kind of confidence. But it was such a shame that we didn't get the goal. But of course, if it was offside,
yeah,
we should have done better.
Yeah, right. I agree with that. And again, like I said, you know, I'm glad that Mike mentioned this, because I didn't want to be the one to say I actually think that he could have quite possibly been offside, because again, I watched it back, and certain times I thought that maybe he was, and then other times like no, I can understand why Kit was so upset, but again, it took Mike, you know, really slowing it down to really tell. So that tells you how close it was, but I could actually see why a linesman would rule that offside. That's all I'm going to say. I can see why, but it could have gone either way. That's the way I'm looking at it. It was close. But again, that just, you know, again, it just tells you about what's going on with us, you know. It shouldn't have come down to that, Mimi. I think my problem with all this, it shouldn't have come down to that situation, Mimi.
Definitely, I agree. We should have scored much earlier on. And luckily, I mean, after Brian Ruiz came on, it seemed like we were in the ascendancy, and we were putting more passes together. We were getting forward. We looked like a lot more cohesive unit. But we weren't able to capitalize on that. And I think that's probably because we just don't have the firepower up front, or at least McCormack is capable, but he's having to drop back to compensate for a lack of creativity in midfield. So he's
right.
Not quite in the right place at the right time, which is a shame, because when you have someone like McCormack in your team who is capable of scoring great goals, if he's not doing what he should and he can't afford to do that, I mean, we're missing firepower up front, which really goes for both teams during the match.
Yeah, listen, I couldn't agree with you more on that. I think the problems up front are pretty noticeable. You know, again, I like Hugo. You know, Hugo is someone, when he's on form, he can score goals. But right now he's having issues, and I think it's time that he get on the bench. I'm sorry. It's just, you know, again, the opportunities are there, and Hugo's just not taking advantage of them. And, you know, again, you bring up a good point about McCormack. I think he needs a good partner up front with him, and then I think he can flourish. And I think he's being asked to do too much, Mimi. Like you said, he's playing deeper and deeper, and every time he does that, I think that hurts the team. But he has to.
Exactly. Otherwise, he gets no service at all, and it's pretty pointless. And it's funny, because you're talking about, well, maybe we should put someone up there with him, and your mind goes to Matt Smith.
Absolutely.
Who's doing fantastically for oh, gosh.
Well, what are your thoughts on that,
Bristol,
Mimi?
I can understand, in a way, why Kit might want to send Matt Smith on loan, and that's probably because of the way in which Matt Smith plays. He's a big player. He likes high balls in the air. He likes set pieces. And that isn't typically something we've been doing that much of. But at the same time, if you've got a player who is in form and is capable of scoring goals, it can't hurt us to have him, really. So I'd love to see him come back. And, I mean, I'd be interested to hear what you two think about that as well.
Well, listen, that's why I wanted to ask you this, because, again, fans have been talking about it a great deal. And I agree with you. You bring up a great point, because I think he goes out, the type of player he is, Mimi, is completely different than the way Kit wants to play. So
yeah.
If he brings him back, it's almost like, well, then he is forcing the team to change. So, again, maybe this goes back to the stubbornness of Kit Simons, Mimi, because, you know, right now it's about scoring goals. And he's informed, so I agree with you. Yes, it's a different style. He brings something different to the table, and it might not look as good. You know, again, I guess you could say beautiful football. He does not play beautiful football. But who cares at this point? It's about scoring goals and getting points. So I can't believe I'm going to say – I haven't said this yet, but I agree with you, Mimi. Bring him back. Bring him back. It can't hurt at this point. Hugo's not scoring. If it forces us to change how we play, so be it. Bring him back. We need the goals. Mike, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's funny. We brought up, you know, do we need him to play up there with him? I'm like, yeah, we have that guy, but he's currently off at Bristol City lighting the world fire. So it's a really sad state of affairs that we're continuing to play Hugo. We also have Woodrow, who we don't seem to put much faith in, although I think Woodrow could do us a job. But, I mean, Matt Smith is a proven goal scorer, and, I mean, I know it's League One, but I'm currently looking at his Bristol City stats, and this is for this season so far. He's had 19 appearances, two as a substitute. He scored 13 goals. He's had 26 shots on target. I mean, that's a 68% scoring ratio for when he's on the pitch, and we could use that. And with our lack of shots on target, he's put 26. I mean, I'll take that. I'll take that every day of the week so far. So, I mean, I don't see why, if he's our man, why we don't just recall him and give him a shot. It can't be any worse than what we're currently doing, unfortunately. So, yeah, I think we should take Matt Smith back. I think we should go back to what worked at Leeds for McCormick and Matt Smith and maybe build a midfield around that. Because right now, that one striker up front, a striker who keeps hitting the side of the net, it's not working. And I don't know if Kit even is thinking. I know he said before in a press conference, no, Matt Smith isn't coming back. And that, again, shows some kind of rookie mistakes from a new manager. And you can't just rule out a player when your team that you're putting out there consistently underperforms and this guy's off doing extremely well. I think we bring him back. I think we repartner him with McCormick and just see what happens.
You know, and I agree with that. And Mimi, just to go back to you on this, I know why he's – I shouldn't say I know why because I have never spoken to Kit, but I have a feeling that the reason he's not willing to do this is because it's a complete change of style. And I think that is something that he's not willing to do. And for me right now, you know, again, I want to look big picture. I want us to be playing very good football moving forward. But right now, I hate to say it, it's about survival. Bring him back. He can't hurt. He's already worked with McCormack, for God's sakes. They had a very good partnership. Bring him back. So I'm with you on that, Mimi.
Yeah, I totally agree with both of you. And I also agree with Mike about Cody Woodrow, who probably could do with a lot more game time because he
absolutely
has shown promise. And it's very strange, really. And the question as well is, why did we bring in Matt Smith, or why didn't we try and sell him permanently in January if we're not going to give him a chance now? It's a shame to have this perfect partner for McCormack and not to use him.
Right, you know, and again, like I said, I think I know why this is not going on. And again, I've heard everyone say, well, it's a different level. And I understand League One is different than the championship. But also, Matt Smith has scored goals in the championship. So it's not like he hasn't scored goals in the championship as well. And he's also played with McCormack. Again, I really think that this is coming down to a stubbornness. And that, to me, is something that's frustrating me. I know Kit wants us to play a certain way. Matt Smith, I believe, is not the type of player that he looks for, and that's probably what's going on here. But at some point, you got to be willing to adapt and change. You know, if you're looking to survive, and right now we're just looking to survive. We're just looking to get through the year. If you don't want Matt Smith, say, in June or July, fine, get rid of him. Get rid of him then. But in the meantime, he's at your disposal. Why not use him? Very good point by you, Mimi, to bring up Matt Smith, because I know it's something that many fans are frustrated about. So thank you for bringing that up. And I'm also unfortunately frustrated that we can't get Steve on. He's having serious problems. Hopefully Steve will continue to try. We've still got about 50 minutes, Steve. If you're listening, please do keep trying to get in. We definitely want to talk to you. All right, guys, let's move on. We talked about the key moments of the match, and of course the match ends up with a goalless nil-nil draw. And Mimi, before we move on, do you think the key moment of the match is the Hugo disallowed goal, or was there something else that you think really was the key moment?
it might well be bringing on Brian Ruiz in the second half, because I felt like after that happened, everything changed. We were a lot more cohesive. There was a lot more creativity. And there were still huge problems with the team, but it did make a difference. And I mean, our set pieces were better. We were getting forward. The pace increased. And it was a much more exciting game in the second half, both from both sides, I felt. That would definitely be probably one of the key moments in my mind. And it shows that we should be starting Brian.
Okay. Fair enough. And just to go back to you talking about Ruiz, Kaká to me seemed like he was playing okay. Did you agree with taking Kaká off? Or was he the only person that could come off for Brian Ruiz?
I might be tempted to take off Rodrigo and play Brian Ruiz just behind McCormack.
Completely agree.
Wow, very good take there, Mimi. I like that take. No, I do. See, that's why you're so valuable. Thank you for coming back on. You've come up with all these great ideas. That's a great idea. That's a great idea. We need to get you. We need to have Kit to talk to you. You know, we have to get a one-on-one with you and Kit. That's what we need.
Well, I think
the coaching staff, for God's sakes. Mike, over to you. What was your key moment? You know, again, you had a chance to watch the replay. Do you agree? Mimi actually brought up a good point, bringing on Brian Ruiz.
Yeah, I think that is one of the key moments. But for me, the key moment is the disallowed goal, only simply because it came so late, and had that gone the other way, you've got 3 points, and we're talking about a completely different match. So for me, the disallowed goal is probably the, like, overarching key moment of the match. But she brings up a very, very, very good point about bringing on Brian Ruiz. And I actually think Kaká Nikolić, from what I saw, and I think he was probably one of our small bright lights throughout this match, because he's still a young guy. He's still finding his feet with us here again and fitting into our formation since he's come back. And I think Kaká Nikolić is a great player with some great skill, and he's never afraid to run at people. And as we said earlier, why was Patrick Roberts not on? Because he runs at defenders. Kaká Nikolić does the same thing, and several times he got into positions just simply by running into the box where Millwall defenders were backing off. So, it was basically a like-for-like swap almost for Kit,
right.
And that's a negative move right there, because you're not changing the dynamic of the game. You're not really adding anything to the game. You're simply saying, oh, here's a player in the exact same position who does the exact same things, and we're just going to replace him with someone else. No, you don't do that. If you're going to change a game to go for a win, you're going to change it to change the flow, the ebb and flow of the match. You keep Kaká Nikolić on. You take off someone like Rodrigo, and you change your formation and take off someone else, and then put Ruiz in there, because I think Ruiz and Kaká Nikolić, both of them have some flair to them, especially Brian. I think that you could have a very, very good team there. So yeah, I completely agree. Take off Rodrigo, put McCormack up front, and you would have a much better chance at winning this match. So yeah, I think it was a very negative move of Kit to replace Kaká Nikolić.
See, I didn't understand, Mike. Even, you know, again, listening to it, we listened to the match yesterday, and when he came off, I'm thinking, you know, again, this is just listening to it without even watching it, and thinking, why is he taking Kaká Nikolić off? He sounds like one of our brightest players today. It didn't make sense to me, and that's why we need, you know, again, I'm going to start this whole promotion, Mimi for manager. I think Mimi should be our new manager.
That's very flattering.
Seriously, but what's great, Mimi, is that I could have you on, and we could talk about this, and we can come up with ideas, and not that Kit Simons is going to listen to us. And I like Kit. I definitely want Kit to succeed. I'm just frustrated. I'm a frustrated supporter. You guys are frustrated as well. And we're coming up with things, with ideas we're seeing. And I just wish he saw what we're seeing. That's all. And maybe, you know, wasn't as stubborn, and maybe would be willing to change. Because sometimes it's actually good to change. I hate change. But even I know that sometimes you need to make changes. And I think he needs to make changes. And the like for like, I'm sorry, you know, again, why are you taking off Kaká? He's playing well. Why are you doing that? And that's what frustrated me. That's why I wanted to bring that up. All right, guys. I got some news from Steve. He said to hold tight, so hopefully Steve is going to be joining us soon. And because it'd be great to talk to him. But in the meantime, let's move on to Stat Attack. And I'm going to give you guys both halftime stats and full-time stats and see what you get out of it. Mimi, I'm going to start with you with the halftime stats and see what you get out of it. Millwall had 59% of the possession, and the Fulham having 41. Total shots, I found this interesting, they were even at 7. Fulham actually had more shots on target, 2-1. Corners, Fulham actually had more corners, 3-2. This one's interesting, crosses, and this has been an issue for Fulham for a while now. They had 21, and Fulham only had 9. Tackles, Fulham had 5, Millwall had 4. Okay, so that's where we are on the halftime stats. Mimi, what do you get out of those statistics?
Yeah, I agree with you about the crosses, and that was a very interesting point, because during the match, very few people were willing to run along the wing and pull the ball back and cross into the box. It just wasn't really happening. We weren't getting men forward to do that. I thought that Millwall, the problem with Millwall was that they were playing quite attractive football, actually, and they looked like an Ian Holloway side in that, you know, they're quite creative and they do some nice things, but they just lacked that power up front. They didn't have a striker, and I really admired number 8 for Millwall. I'm really sorry, I'm not sure what his name was, but he was a very nice technical player, and I'd love to see someone like him at Fulham. But it was a very disappointing first half. We didn't seem to put much together.
Fabbrini, that's number 8.
I was going to say, I thought it was, but I'm glad that you could say it was Fabbrini. He was actually, you know, again, he stood out for me. So good point by you for bringing him up, Mimi.
And thank you, Mike, for finding out who he is. It's great to see a play like that, because we seem to have a lot of difficulty sort of dealing with him, and he was quite a tricky player.
Yeah.
But really, the stats weren't good enough, because Millwall are a side that we should have been dominating against. And,
absolutely.
And to have them have more possession is very disappointing.
Oh, boy, we got David Holly chiming in. He must be listening, because he's chiming in of our conversation here. So if we get a chance, check on Twitter, David Holly's comments on the show so far. All right, Mike, what are your thoughts about the halftime stats?
The halftime stats, you know, it kind of just sadly shows how poor both teams were. And it really just shows how much of a match, although we didn't get video coverage, which I would have loved to have watched, we didn't miss too much, unfortunately. You know, and I hate to say that. I wish I could be saying, oh, I missed such an amazing game of football, but I didn't. I didn't really miss too much. But, you know, overall, I think it just goes to show that our diamond-style formation is a very toxic formation for this group of players. We seem to keep the ball in the center of the pitch. Parker does I think he played actually a very good game yesterday. Some of his passes, he threaded those passes through defenders very, very well. But, you know, overall, our players, Kaka Niklic, you've got Tunnicliffe, you've got Christensen, we're bottling all these players who have great individual talent, and we're sticking them in a very, very small area to work with, and that's not what they should be doing. We should be playing out to the wing. So I'm not surprised to see such a poor cross ratio for us and the fact that we don't take them, because it seems that Kit and his staff or the people that are helping them train on the pitch during the week are basically saying, no, we're going to do quick passing through the middle and break down defending. That's great. That's great in theory, but is it coming out in practicality? No, it's not. So we need the crosses are an exact correlation to the fact that we don't play wide. We're not changing our formation. We're sticking to a diamond, and the diamond does not help create crossing opportunities. A diamond formation works great for a team like Arsenal, who have these fantastic players who can one touch and just kind of weave through defenses, but we don't do that. We can't do that with the players we have right now. So,
right.
Yeah, I think it the halftime stats show that we need to change the formation, not in the second half. We need to come out from the very beginning of the first half with a new formation, a wider formation, just crossing balls into the box. You never know what kind of touch it's going to take, if the keeper is going to make a mistake, who can get their head on it. So the halftime stats really just show an emphasis for changing formation on the off, not during the game, but from the get-go. Keep teams on the back foot.
I'm sorry to laugh, Mike, but David Holly just sent me a Skype message. He wanted me to ask you if you read his piece on the diamond formation.
I did not. If you could send that to me, that'd be wonderful.
Okay. I'll send that to you. David actually wrote a very interesting article on cottagersconfidential.espnation.com on Friday, and I will send that to you after the show. But, you know, again, it's funny. You're sounding just like him, which is scaring me. You guys are all sounding like David Holly. I don't know what I'm going to do now.
Yeah,
too
sorry,
much David Holly talk. Oh. I'm just kidding. All right. Let's go to full-time stats. You know, the fact that even Giannis is talking about David Holley is very scary. Okay. Let's go to full-time stats, and here we go. This one's interesting. Millwall had 51% possession. Fulham had 49%, so obviously the possession changed in the second half. Total shots, Millwall had 16%. Fulham had 12%. Shots on target, Millwall had 3%. As Giannis pointed out, Fulham only had 2 shots on target. Corners, they had 5%. Fulham had 4%. Crosses, again, we're talking about crosses. This is going back to what Mike, you were talking about, and also what you were mentioning, Mimi. 37 crosses to 16. Passing accuracy, Millwall was a little bit better at 76%, and Fulham were at 71%. And fouls were pretty much even. They had 14 to 13. And, Mimi, I'll go right back to you. What sticks out to you with the full-time stats?
Again, it's really interesting that Millwall's stats look slightly better than ours, which is disappointing because, really, I mean, against a better team, I worry that we would have been absolutely unstuck and it would have been quite dreadful. I mean, there's a slight improvement there, but it's still not good enough. And there are things which we really could have been doing better, things like passing accuracy. There were a lot of sloppy moments, a lot of missed balls, a lot of misplaced passes, which, I mean, in the stands, there was a lot of frustration, a lot of sort of people getting quite actively frustrated because the quality of the football they were watching just wasn't good enough at points. And that was disappointing.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because on Twitter, you know, all I kept seeing on Twitter, Mimi, from people that were at the match was basically these were two very, very poor sides, you know,
yeah.
And just, you know, and again, I kept seeing that over and over. And that's why, you know, again, the people being there, you know, I trust their view. Again, I'm listening to it, but what I'm seeing on Twitter is even worse than what I'm listening to. And then I'm watching it, and it basically matched exactly what you guys are talking about who are at the match. It was a poorly played match by two teams that are both in very poor form. And the stats even show you that, you know, again, if you're looking at the stats, you know, it kind of looks like, you know, going just based on that Millwall was better than I thought. And I still don't think they were. But again, that just tells you it's really two poor teams playing each other. Fulham are in a very poor patch, I guess you could say. And it shows. It's, you know, it's that lack of continuity that goes throughout the entire show. You know, again, it's they have the players, they have the ability, but they're just not in sync. You know, I hate to say that word in sync, but that to me is what it's all about. Mike, over to you. What stands out to you from the stats?
You know, and before I bring this up, it kind of goes with the stats, actually, kind of coupled with it. In February 16th of this month, we loaned out Williams, our Welsh winger, to MK Dons. And I think that is a very, very scary statement of intent from Kit and the club, because these stats show that we're crying out for width and we're crying out for a winger, and yet we just loaned Williams, who we just signed on a new contract. So we're basically saying that we're refusing to change from the formation we're playing, so we're not learning from the error of our ways. I think that's a very scary notion, and it's kind of – I really hope that it's not a sign of worse things to come, because we just loaned out one of our brightest young talents, who's a winger, to MK Dons a few days ago. I mean, what does that tell you about our formation and our intent from our manager and our club? So that's kind of a scary thought. Overall, when you look at the full-time stats, I think that we did deserve to win the match, because the stats show a scrappy game, a game of two clubs that are kind of, and again, I know you hate to say it, Russ, and so do I, two clubs fighting for survival. So there's not so much of a flair. It's more of a scrappy physical battle, which the team didn't care, both teams didn't care how they won. They just wanted to win it. And I think a 0-0 draw is a fair result. However, I think when you look at the better chances and which team they fell to, I think we really should have won this match by at least 2 goals. Because Millwall, like Mimi said, a very good point that they do play like a very Ian Holloway type of side. They've got some great flair, some great creativity. But if you look on the whole, the chances that fell to us, I think we had much more of many more clear-cut chances than Millwall did. So it's very unfortunate that we lost. But overall, not lost, I'm sorry, that we drew, but it felt like a loss.
Okay. You know, and again, for me, it was definitely 2 points dropped. This was an opportunity. And they did not take advantage of this opportunity. And Mimi, I want to go to you because, again, I want to get your thoughts on this. Mike brought up a very good point about talking about George Williams. I know we're going off in a little bit different direction. But we are focusing on the diamond formation. I believe in past discussions you mentioned you do like the diamond formation. But I'm curious your thoughts about sending away someone like George Williams, which could have us play wider if we wanted to. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I agree about George Williams and that he was actually quite a promising player in a few matches. I guess my issue with the diamond is it could work well if we have stronger creativity in midfield. And I guess one of the issues as well at the moment is we don't really have that strong wingers at the moment to bring on, apart from playing Ruiz on the wing or Kakanitlic. And in the past few matches, we've been playing Kakanitlic sometimes through the centre, which
right.
I think is ineffective. I mean, I'd prefer to see us playing something like with that width. And I suppose the issue with the diamond as well at the moment is that our wing backs aren't really getting forward that well. Stafford Leedless does get forward well, quite well. But is it Williams or our other? I'm so sorry, I've had an absolute brain blank. Our other fullback doesn't really.
Oh, Jazz Richards.
Richards doesn't get forwards in quite as effectively as Stafford Leedless does.
Yeah, you know, and that's an issue too. You know, again, it's the way that we're playing, like you said, you know, we've talked about it on College Talk that the ability of the fullbacks to get forward and also cover getting back has been an issue too. So their jobs, again, they're not, you know, again, they need to be doing better. They need to be more of a two-way players, you know, going forward and also being able to defend. So that's, I see where you're going with that on the diamond. I know that you're not against the diamond, but would you know, again, if I put you as manager, we want you to be manager now, Mimi. Would you be open to changing the formation?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
Okay, that's it. Mimi's I'm going to contact Fulham. I want you to be the new Fulham manager. I made up my mind.
Sarah Brooks, if you're listening, Mimi for McGaffer.
Thank you. Very flattering.
Oh boy. Okay. By the way, Mike, I just sent a message to you with David's article, so maybe after the show you can check it out. It's actually about Brian Ruiz, but it really is more about the diamond. The title says Brian Ruiz, but it's really more about the diamond. David and I have argued about that, but again, mentioning Brian Ruiz obviously you know, gets people interested, but it really is more a focus on the diamond formation. So check it out. Okay, all right. Let's now do some ratings. And Mike, before I go to Mimi, would you like to do the ratings? I mean, do you feel comfortable doing the ratings, or should we just let Mimi do it? I'll leave it up to you.
I feel comfortable with it. However, obviously, for anyone listening, Mimi is going to have much more accurate numbers and probably much more accurate representation than what I'm going to say. I'll say my part from what I think, but overall, I would say Mimi's has more validity to it than mine.
Okay, but you would be open to doing it as well, and we'll just do it with that caveat that Mimi was there and you just watched the replay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Then why don't we do the two of you do the ratings then, as long as you feel comfortable with that, Mike, and I have no problem with that. All right, Mimi, let's start with you with Marcus Bettinelli. You know, a goalkeeper that I actually think could really be something in years to come. But I want to get your rating for him in this match. I don't think he had that much to do, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree. He wasn't really tested. He did everything he should have done. He distributed quite well. He was kind of a faultless performance, but I totally agree with you in that there wasn't much opportunity really to go wrong. So, I mean, I want to give him a high mark, but I'm not sure whether that's too unfair. Can I give him 6.25? Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay.
I love your ratings. I love your ratings. it drives David Holly crazy, so that makes me happy. So I love your ratings.
6.75, I think. 6.75.
6.75. Excellent.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, to you on Marcus Bettinelli.
Marcus didn't have too much to do. He made the saves when he needed to. Again, he really didn't do anything. So the rating that I'm about to give him isn't showing that he had a poor match. It's just I'm not going to give you a high rating for not doing anything. So I'd give him a 6 overall, 6 out of 10.
Oh, okay, fair enough. All right, Mimi, right back to you. Let's now talk about, again, we just were talking about the fullback. So I'm curious your ratings for Jazz Richards and Kostas Stafoulidis.
Richards, I didn't think it was a fantastic game for him. He wasn't that tested, but nor did he do anything that spectacular. He didn't really get forward that well. So I'll probably give him a 5, and I'll probably give Stafoulidis a 5.5, only because I like Stafoulidis. I think he's an exciting player. He gets forward and he gets back in time as well, and he's quite fit and he can put a good ball through from the wing. But again, he wasn't a spectacular performance at all, and he didn't really link up with anyone.
Okay, good stuff there. Mike, over to you.
Jazz Richards gets a 5.5 for me. He's no better. He's not like an upgrade to Grimmer. We've seen on several shows. I don't see why Kit insists on playing him. I'm not saying he's a poor player. I just don't see why we insist on playing a lone player when we're going to have to put Grimmer back immediately and he's just going to be rusty and they're going to have to give him some game time to break in. So I think it's kind of silly to just be playing him from the off. He gets a 5.5. He wasn't tested too often. But the fact that we were playing Millwall, I expect everyone on our team to be doing better than that performance. So Jazz Richards gets a 5.5. Stafoulidis, I'm very biased because I love the guy. He's 20 years old, and he wouldn't guess it by looking at him. I think Stafoulidis gets a 6.5 from me. He had a very decent game. I've never really been too let down from Stafoulidis, bar the occasional rash challenge that he has. The ball he laid in for Roddy Yega for the offsides goal was a beautiful one. So overall, I think it was a very fair match for Stafoulidis. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything too spectacular. So a 6.5 for Staffy.
Okay, fantastic. All right, Mike, right back to you. Let's talk about the center backs. I'm curious your thoughts on Nikolai Bodaroff and Sean Hutchinson.
They're both going to get 6.5 again for me. There was a few times where a Millwall player was free in the box that he was left completely unmarked. For example, the first few minutes of the match when Millwall could have buried a cross and it would have been 1-0 to Millwall on the off. So they both get a 6.5 from me. They didn't play particularly well, and they didn't play particularly poorly. I think that they did their job. They got us a clean sheet, so I can't be upset with that. Their communication is constantly improving, and I think unfortunately for Burn, I think they are our two best center backs that we have, and I think that they're a good pairing. So overall, I have no complaints with them, and I can't really fault them for anything they did or failed to do. So they get a 6.5 across the board.
Okay, fantastic. And Mimi, just to set the record straight, I'm not winding you up. Don't look at Twitter with David Holly right now. Just so you know that, okay? Just disregard his drivel right now. That's all I'm going to say. Disregard that. Okay. Over to you. You know, and again, I want to get your ratings, but going off on what Mike was mentioning, when I'm watching this match, and again, we're being critical of how bad Millwall was, but shouldn't we give a little credit to the guys in defense because they definitely did their job?
Yeah, I agree, and I think it was. I totally agree with Mike in that they didn't really do much that was wrong. I guess my support for Dan Burn is because of his ability as a motivator and because a lot of the young players seem to have a really good relationship with him because they've played with him for such a long time and also because he can be so good at set pieces and he has scored a few goals from those positions and we're so woeful at set pieces. But, yeah, I agree with Mike. And just thinking about it, I'd probably up the rating I gave to Stafoulidis to a 6 and then I'll give the both of the centre-backs 5.75, I think.
Okay. Fantastic.
Sorry, David.
Yes. David, you listening? Okay. All right. Mimi, right back to you. What's now going to the midfield? Let's do Scott Parker and Ryan Tunnicliffe together. So give me a rating for those two players.
Oh, gosh. Sorry. I had a problem with my sound system just then.
Okay, I'm sorry. Scott Parker and Ryan Tunnicliffe.
Scott Parker, I do wonder about where we're playing him. He does sometimes tire during matches, and I'd like to see him sit a bit further back than where he is at the moment. But it wasn't a terrible performance. I just didn't think he can create in the same way as someone like Brian Ruiz can. I'll probably give him a 5.5, whereas Tunnicliffe, he was really anonymous during this game. I didn't really notice him do much at all, which is really problematic, because I thought in a few other games he's been quite a strong figure. So I'll probably give him a 5.
Okay.
I thought he really needs to put up his socks up probably.
Okay, fantastic. Mike, over to you.
I actually, this is where I kind of disagree with Mimi a little bit from what I've seen, of course. I think. Scott, you know, I think he did, especially if you look at his age, I think he did fairly well this match. If you look at some of his through balls, I mean, he set players up for multiple chances, for shots on goal. Some of his passes, his through balls were just exquisite, a few of them. And I really feel that had we've been looking at Rodallega burying the shot that he put into the side netting, or Kaka Nikolic, or any of these coming, you'd notice that Scott Parker was kind of the crux of all of it with some of these through balls that were able to split the defense. So I'm going to give Scotty a 7. Granted, I do think his days are past with him. And if we are going to have a player come back and help Kit coach, and if it's not going to be Danny Murphy, I would not be upset to see Scott Parker taking on an assistant manager job. I'm going to throw that one out there, because he may be past it as a player right now, but that man certainly knows the game, and he's played at the top level, whether it's international for club or country or club. So I think Scott Parker would do a very, very good job as an assistant manager should we offer that position to him, because I'm certain some club will.
Right.
And Tunnicliffe, yeah, I really like the guy, and I think that he's got some great promise, but he kind of wasn't, you know, he was kind of an enigma. He was kind of a guy there that I wasn't really following, kind of popped up from place to place. So I think I'm going to have to give Tunnicliffe a 5.5.
Okay, good stuff. All right, Mike, right back to you. I'm curious your thoughts on LVC and Kaka in this match.
Kaka is going to be my man of the match. I'm going to give Kaka Nikolic a 7.5, and unfortunately that's the highest any player is going to get for such a kind of a dull performance. I think, you know, where he maybe made some mistakes and some of his shots he should have buried, or he fluffed a shot here and there. He's never afraid to run at the Millwall defense. He was very, very creative when he was given the opportunity, and I think that he is just kind of screaming out for width. He's the kind of player that needs to be able to run and drive at people. He doesn't do as well surrounded by three players like Brian Ruiz could do and kind of get through them. He's calling out for width, and with that width comes his pace, and with that pace comes his ability to trick players and get them on the back foot. So I think Kaka Nikolic was our bright spot yesterday, and I really enjoyed watching him. So when he was substituted, I was a little bit infuriated with that and very, very confused.
Okay.
OBC is going to get a 6.5 for me. Again, he did a very good job, and he got himself some great places. But he, ever since that injury, he seems to be kind of wary in some circumstances where he wasn't beforehand. Although he didn't do anything too wrong, I think he is definitely one of our better players, and I really, really rate him, and I think he's going to be a star one day for sure. So a 6.5 for LVC and a 7.5 for Kaka.
Okay. And it's funny, Michael, you know, I don't usually rate players, but I actually think LVC's coming along. I think the injury has affected him, but I saw some more pace from him in this match. So, maybe this is a good sign, because I thought that he's been out of sort the last several matches, and I thought this was a move forward for him, because he did look dangerous at times, and I think he's getting back to that player, and hopefully we're going to see that in the upcoming matches, because they certainly need him to look like the player that was playing for Fulham before he got injured. I think he's getting there. He's not quite there yet, so I understand why you rated him that way. Over to you, Mimi.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to echo Mike's ratings and give both players 6.5.
Okay.
I really like LVC. I really do. I think he's such a great player. He improves. I mean, at least before his injury, he was improving match on match. He's creative, he gets forward, he works hard, he links up with other players. Physically, we've seen him change from really a youth player who could get knocked over very easily to a proper senior player, which is a really great sign, and he has a lot of promise. And I thought today he was actually one of the few players, like Kaka Nikolic, who got forward and tried to break into space and was actually not static, because when we were moving forwards, it was like everyone was standing in the same position. No one was running into space. No one was getting free, but Christiansen, I think, really, and I'm glad he's got his own chant now, which is really good, and it shows that our fans are now appreciating him a bit more, which is
good.
That's good. Not that we didn't appreciate him before, that is. But and then Kakinetlic, I agree, he had a good game, and he is definitely stronger when he's playing on the wing than centrally. But it wasn't a game where he had the opportunity to shine, perhaps because he didn't have the support around him.
Okay, good stuff there, Mimi. All right, I'm really curious your thoughts on Hugo, so I'm going to give you Hugo and Ross McCormack.
I'm going to give him 5 because he did get that offside goal. I feel like the thing about Hugo is that he has a number of weaknesses and he doesn't suit our system. I think Hugo would best be played in if we had 3 up front and he was sort of on the wing of that 3 up front. He's a very quick player. He's very athletic. His positioning is quite good. It's just he doesn't know what to do with the ball when he gets it in the final third. I've no idea what it is, but he has quite a weak shot usually. He doesn't understand where to put the ball. He misplaces passes a lot, and I'm not sure if the stats will back me up in that. But it was just another match where he hit the side netting a few times, and as you two both said earlier, you just can't afford to do that.
No.
Against a team like Millwall, who we should be capitalising against. And McCormack, though, I'm going to give a 6.5 because he didn't get any service, but he did look pretty good and he tried his best. It's just that he was having to drop back. And perhaps if we had more creativity in midfield, he might have found the back of the net.
Very good point there, Mimi, about Ross McCormack. And Hugo, you know, again, Hugo drives me nuts because I know he can score goals. I just feel that I've said this about him several times, Mimi. Tell me if this is a good description of Hugo. He's consistently inconsistent.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think I want him to do well so badly because he has been informed before. But, I mean, what my dad said to me when we were sitting at the match is it's like
yeah.
a police car going to the wrong crime. Like, he's doing all the right things. Like, he's driving as fast as he can, running. It's just, it's not quite there in the end. The final product isn't there. It's a shame. I was glad. I think he got a goal recently, which was very good. So hopefully
yes.
his confidence will lift and we'll see a new Rodiega.
Yeah, it's just, you know, again, it's Hugo's just this enigma. You know, he's consistently, you know, back, you know, up and down. That's the only way I could say, you know, like you said, he does everything right except for maybe the final thing, you know, and that's the problem, you know, and that's, you know, again, he could do all the right moves, but it's just, it's that last move, that last shot, or it's just, it's off just a little bit. Like you said, that's a great analogy with the cops going to the wrong crime scene. I like that. That's very good. Okay, over to you, Mike.
Let's see, Ross McCormack, there was one part in particular during the match where, you know, I was actually yelling at the replay, of course, during the Gentleman Jim commentary, where he really should have had a shot. And I don't know why he was holding on
yeah.
to the ball too much. You know exactly what you're talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about, Mike.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where I kind of started really docking Ross some points there because, you know, it was a perfect position for him to take a shot on. And I just don't understand why he's starting to play that cam role when, I mean, that may be where his positioning is, but at the end of the day, he is a striker and he knows how to score a goal or two. So he's being so unselfish now at this point, and it's almost being selfish for the team because he's trying to be so unselfish and create chances for other players that he's creating these chances that aren't, you know, they aren't becoming a finished product and we're not scoring goals. Where I would rather him be more selfish and take shots, which would help us win more matches or at least score more goals. So it's a really kind of a tough spot for Ross to be in, especially with probably the guidance he's been given and Hugo playing up top. So Ross is going to get a 6 from me. He's always a bright spot for us. Every match, when he gets the ball, I always think, okay, something could start here. He could find a great pass. He can do a good move. He could have a great shot. So he gets a 6. Hugo was, to me, the worst player on the day for us. I mean, and I'm not trying to say this
to
be just straight ruthless on him, but he is getting to the point now where his mistakes and his constant errors in matches is costing us. And if you're going to be given the responsibility of being our single striker, You have to be showing us why we're giving you that responsibility, and he's simply not doing it. Had he scored that offside goal and had it not been disallowed, again, I'd probably be saying something totally different. But because it was disallowed and he's had so many other chances, not just in this match but in matches prior since our seven games without a win, it's starting to become a little bit ridiculous. So I'm going to give Hugo a 5.
Okay, very good. And Mike, just to go back to you, you were mentioning Ross McCormack, and I'm going to give you a name of a player that I wish he would emulate a little bit, talking about the situation that you were talking about. I'll give you a player that if he was in that situation, he would shoot, and he would shoot from everywhere. Be more like Clint Dempsey.
Absolutely. Yep.
Be more like Clint Dempsey. Clint Dempsey would shoot from everywhere. And, again, it was more about, it's not always about – sometimes it's about the quantity. Just shoot. Just shoot.
It exactly is, yes, because there were times when Dempsey would get it, and if a play didn't build, he would say, sod it, I'm going to have a shot and see what happens. And he would either go in the net, maybe it'd be off target, maybe there'd be a rebound, it'd hit the – you never know. I mean, Ross is kind of getting the ball, saying, okay, I'm looking for the shot, it's there, where are my other players available? But then he takes too long to make up his mind. And so it goes back to what Mimi said about, do these players actually trust each other enough to relinquish possession of the ball? Whereas maybe Ross knows, I know Kaká will take a shot and I know Tunnicliffe will take a shot. But if he doesn't see those two players open and he sees Rodallega and Parker, he's less likely to give them the ball. That kind of lack of synergy, that lack of connection between all of our players is killing us at the moment. So, yeah, be more like Clint Dempsey. And if there's no, if you don't trust the player, just have the shot. Just take it.
Just take it. Just take it. Again, listen, I'm the biggest Clint Dempsey fan, but he has his flaws. But the one thing that I always liked about him was that he would shoot and just shoot and just shoot. And, because eventually he's going to score. And I just wish at some point Ross McCormack would just shoot. Because, I think he does that sometimes. I wish he would do it more often because I think he would score more goals. He's a talented player. And if there's a player that I was thinking about, Mike, when you were saying this, Clint Dempsey just came to mind. Because Clint Dempsey would just shoot. And that's what I would like Ross McCormack to do a little bit more. If he doesn't trust the people around him, just shoot. Especially when you're in dangerous situations. Just shoot and see what happens. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about subs. Again, Fofana wasn't on long enough to really rate him. But, Mimi, I want to get your thoughts on Brian Ruiz. Again, he was on for over 30 minutes. So give me your rating for Brian Ruiz.
I am a big Brian Ruiz fan.
I know you are.
I think he's a really fantastic player. He's so good to watch. And just when he came on, he has so much ability. And maybe he would have been stronger if you played him a little bit further forward. But having that creative force in midfield did make a difference. I don't think it's an accident that we haven't actually won a game this season without Brian Ruiz being on the pitch at some point, because he is that crucial player, and I would give him 6.5 for that brief appearance, because he came on the pitch, and as soon as he did, it made a difference.
Okay.
I also thought Fofana wasn't terrible either. He can sometimes be a little bit selfish with the ball, but he has enormous potential, and he does run at people, and he does get forward, which is more than some of our other players have been doing, unfortunately.
Okay, do you think it was a mistake, Mimi, to put him on, to bring him on so late?
Yes, I think he should have been brought on a lot earlier, and if not either him or Patrick Roberts, and probably Patrick Roberts would have been a great player to see.
He was on the bench.
Yeah.
Again, a lost opportunity, and very very good point by you on Roberts, and also talking about Fofana. Very very good there, and really talking about Brian Ruiz. Over to you, Mike, on Brian Ruiz.
I don't feel comfortable speaking about Fofana or because he came on so late, and since I wasn't there, it would really be unfair of me to rate him. However, Brian Ruiz, during the show while we were talking, I read through David's article on the Diamond Formation and Brian Ruiz, and I have to say that I think that David's piece on Brian Ruiz is quite, eerily spot on. And I know that might not get me much favor with people who love Brian Ruiz, but I really think that his article is pretty spot on, because as much as Brian Ruiz is an amazing player, he's immense. He's got skill, the silky skill of Berbatov, at times. I mean, this guy is definitely a talent. he's too inconsistent. He's much like Hugo in the fact that he's consistently inconsistent, because each match I'll see a glimmer of some greatness from Brian Ruiz, and then the next 35 minutes is just kind of him being a lightweight show pony. He's got great skill, but he gets knocked off the ball. Or he's got great skill, and all of a sudden he's just – he kind of can't find a way, an avenue of approach, and he just gets the ball nicked off of him. I mean, I just feel as if he's kind of a luxury player that we have, that that kind of style is not suited for the championship. So as much as I do enjoy Brian Ruiz, and I think that we need to play him, I do. I think he's one of our best players, that when he's not on the pitch, we are missing a spark. He's also a player that he's a free man walking. We all know he didn't get sold in the transfer window. So now we all know there's no way we're keeping him in the summer. He is going to leave as a free agent and go to whatever club he wants and whatever club he desires that will accept him. So the fact that we are continuing to base a formation and a style of play around a player who will only be with us for the next few months, and that style also doesn't seem to be working, it flabbergasts me, because I love Brian and I think we need to play him, but we need to stop building a formation around him and players like him, because we only have him for the next few months and then he's gone. I mean, that's a pretty known fact, at least my personal opinion. So
right.
I think Brian gets a 6.5 for me, because when he came on, he started our revival. We did much better with him, and we definitely could have won with Brian, and we always look much more threatening. But at the same time, we need to stop catering to him, because he's going to no longer be a Fulham player in a few months.
Okay. Understand your take there, and definitely entitled to your take. And I'm sure David's listening and very happy that you had such nice things to say about his article. And, you know, it's funny because seriously, and I want to give David props because David, this is David's first article of writing anything, and I thought he did a tremendous job. So, David, dear listening, you deserve all kinds of accolades for this article. You did a very good job. And the last time I looked, David had over 1,700 views of this article. So that should tell you that people were definitely reading what David had to say. So I'm happy for you, my friend, if you're listening. All right, let's move on. And Mimi, I want to go back to you. Let's now rate the manager. I'm curious your rating for Kit.
Well, it wasn't one of Kit's best matches, and I'm not in favor of getting rid of him at all just at this moment, but I probably would give him a 5 just because – tactically, in terms of substitutions, in terms of the opening lineup, it wasn't really good enough, unfortunately. I mean, I was glad he brought on Ruiz as early as he did during the second half, but perhaps he should have come on at half time.
Right.
And I like Kit, and I like that the players like him, and I think it is not a good time to change our manager, and I will give him a second chance, but perhaps he needs to have a think about how we're currently playing.
Yeah. Listen, that's what it's all about it for me, Mimi. I want him to succeed. Totally. I'm there with you. You know, again, I want a kid here. But I just want a kid to be able to be open to changing things. And
yeah.
Change is a scary thing, but I just think that he needs to be open to it. And right now, I don't see evidence that he's open enough to change. Sometimes you just have to make changes and freshen things up. And if your opponent is coming at you with A, you have to be able to adjust and go to B. And, you know, that's my biggest criticism of him. It's just be open to change. Be willing to change things, because you might be improving the situation for yourself if you're open to change. So I see where you're going on that. Mike, to you on Kit.
Kit's got a 4. I know I said that Brian Ruiz was going to get the lowest – or not Brian, I'm sorry. Roddy Yeager. The lowest rating of the players. If you're talking about overall, Kit's going to get a 4 from me. He's not learning from the error of his ways, and it's been quite a few matches now where we've said, okay, the honeymoon period's over. Okay, we all know that. That's done. But Kit just seems to be in this mindset where he's just being different, and he's not an unintelligent man. He's a very intelligent man, and he was a very intelligent player. And what he did for our academy and our youth team is fantastic. So I don't know if he's kind of still stuck in the mentality of what worked for my youth and academy teams to win cups and win the league can just be kind of transferred over to the senior team, because obviously that's not working if that's what he's intending to doing. So I think he really needs to start experimenting a little bit more. He kind of came
right
in and and stuck with the diamond. And again, it's not that he's unintelligent. It's just kind of, you know, I'm not saying your season's lost, because it's not. But don't get relegated and start experiencing a little bit more, experimenting. So I think stick with Kit. I think that we need to give him more, as I've said numerous times on this show in particular, we need to give him more than 3/4 of one season, especially when that one season is his first ever senior managerial attempt at being a gaffer. So I think he has a lot to learn, and we need to start looking at Manchester United, because Sir Alex Ferguson almost got sacked his first season. He turned it around and ended up being a legend. I'm not saying Kit will be Sir Kit Simmons in the future, but we need to stop just sacking managers for the sake of a poor run of results, poor half of a season, sack the manager, because then we'll never have proper change, proper stability, and proper growth. So
that's right.
Stick with Kit. In the summer, if they elect to choose to remove him, that's fine. But just remember that if you remove him as a manager, you're on a contract, you have to pay him the money for terminating his contract early. And are we really going to want to spend the money on terminating another managerial contract and then pay him out? Or are we going to spend that money on players and a wise acquisitions of new players? So I say stick with Kit, give him a chance, and he just really needs to shape up at this point, because his little I'm new charade is over. He needs to learn now.
Listen, I definitely hear you on that. And the one thing that I do want to mention before, again, we only have a few minutes left to the show. Mike, I'm going to give you a head coach. You know, again, his first year, he was 5-11 in the NFL with the New England Patriots. He's won 4 Lombardi trophies since then, and that's
yep.
Bill Belichick. And
yep.
It takes a while sometimes to learn your craft, to learn your team, to have the team you want. So I'm willing to give him to the summer and take it from there. That's why I'm not giving up on him. I just want him to be – I want to see his ability to learn and change. That's all. You know, and again, I'm not against that. Guys, I'm gonna put this person on. I think Steve might be with us. Let me just double check. Steve, are you with us?
Can you hear me, Russ?
Steve, I can't believe it took it to the end of the show. You finally got on. How are you doing?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Russ. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Steve. Listen, we're going to have to do this again. We only have, believe it or not, 2 minutes left to the show.
Absolutely.
But listen, now you finally connected. I'm going to get you on another show real soon, my friend.
I've just done it for the iPhone, Russ. It's a lot easier.
Well, it's okay. First time's tough, my friend. It should be much easier the second time around.
Yeah, no worries, Russ.
Okay. Well, guys, believe it or not, we only have 2 minutes left to the show, and we're gonna have to wrap up the show. You know, again, I didn't really get a chance to rate the referee or rate Millwall, but that's okay. You know, again, wasn't that great of a match, but again, Mimi, thank you very much for joining us today. I really appreciate it, and I truly do want to talk to the team about bringing you into the management.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Russ. It was great speaking with you and Mike.
It was, and please don't be a stranger. I want you back on soon, my friend.
I'd love to come back on the show again. Sounds good.
Okay, fantastic. Mike, according to our schedule, you'll be joining us again very soon. You were great again. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Mimi, it was great talking to you, and I hope to hear from you soon. And Steve, hopefully next time we can sort out these technical problems. I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Steve, again, I'm so sorry you had so many problems. I'm really sorry about that. But I'll make it up to you on the next time you come on. I'll give you more time to talk, and hopefully you'll be on with David Holly, and I'll just mute his line the entire time.
That's pretty fantastic.
All right, guys, I have to wrap up this show. For Mimi, Mike, and Steve, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers.
Cheers.
See you later.
Cheers, guys.
Thunder. beyond the world. Come out of